I'm Joe, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Joe.
Hey. My sobriety date is October 7th, 2010, and which at the beginning of this month, I got a year sober. And when I first got here, I actually came to this room, and I was terrified. I was really scared, and I was really scared of myself, and I was really scared more so of you and everyone else, and life in general. But I met this woman who, you know, took my hand and said you didn't have to be scared anymore, and that, you know, there was a different way. And so without much further ado, I give you Monica.
Hi, my name is Monica, and I'm an alcoholic. And congratulations to Joe. I think it's absolutely amazing that you're celebrating a year tonight. You know, she, as you just heard her do, she tends to say things as a question, and that turns out really, really well in Alcoholics Anonymous when everything is a question, as opposed to telling me what she already knew and what she already planned on doing and how she was already going to do things. She came in here and she was open to the idea of doing something differently and did it, and she's picked up one white chip and she's here a year later because she worked the steps, she showed up, she helps other people, and she's done the deal here, and it's kind of been amazing to watch. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to do it, you know? I got sober in June 13th of 2005, this is my home group. I love it dearly. I've had to work the past couple of weeks, so it's really awkward to not have been here. It makes me really, really uncomfortable. It makes me think about like the nights that I don't feel like coming, and then when you take my option away from me, all of a sudden I really want to be here. So I'm excited to be here tonight. I do have a sponsor. Her name's Melanie. She's absolutely fantastic. And I sponsor other people like Joe. And that's such a great opportunity for me because it's really easy to come in here and get sober and things start to go well and to just think about how great everything is and to forget about how much pain it was before, how much it sucked before, how hard it is to get sober. That was absolutely miserable. So helping somebody else kind of go through that keeps that fresh and keeps it new. And so I'm very grateful for that shot. Basically, I grew up like most other South Tampa yuppie kids. That's kind of where I came from. I have two parents that are really lovely. They're very nice people. They love each other. They're good people. They do the right thing all the time. They raised my brother and my sister, and they're fantastic. The month that I went to rehab, my brother graduated from law school, and my sister got her master's, and I went to rehab. So I cannot blame this on my parents. You know, I really wanted... When I went to treatment, that was something I really wanted, was that the blame. Like, who do we point at? Whose fault is this? How did this happen to me? And I'm grateful that in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was told it didn't really matter how it happened. It mattered what I was going to do about it. And they told me to stop beating my head against the wall of trying to figure it out, because it didn't matter. If you told me today, right here, right now, how it happened, how I ended up in this room, it would not change a thing. I would still have to keep doing all the things that I have to do today when I don't know how I ended up here. So I gave up on that. What I did need to know is how to stop living the way that I was living before. Now, I grew up in a Catholic house because I'm Cuban and Sicilian, so that's just kind of how that goes. I was raised to go to church. I was raised in a Catholic school. I was raised to do the right thing. They told me what the right thing was to do, and they taught it to me. They didn't do any of that wrong. And I knew what the right thing was to do, but my selfish, self-centered nature doesn't particularly care if it doesn't suit my needs. So all the good, like, school learning you can give me, and if I want to do something, I'm still going to do it anyway. You know, I grew up wanting to be a nun. I used to, like, skip school and hide out in the chapel and pray, mainly because... I used to tell you that it was because I was such a fantastic person and I was so spiritual, but really it was because I learned in a Catholic school that there were these kids, like, all over the world that Mary would appear to, and I wanted her to appear to me, and then you'd write a book about me, and people would talk about how fantastic it was, and that never happened, so I got very resentful about that I would, like, sit and pray the rosary all day long, and nobody ever appeared, and so I kept trying to do that, whatever, and I didn't want to be as selfish and self-centered as I was. I knew that there was something off. You know, so many people talk about that there was something off. They felt different. They felt whatever. There was something very off because I knew what the right thing was to do and I did not care. And I lived in a lot of ways in like a fantasy world where I would just make stuff up. Just absolutely make stuff up. Half the time to you, but more often just to myself, you know. This is how today went, and it would be a complete fabrication versus what actually had happened. And as I grew older, I got a boyfriend, like we do. And I got a boyfriend, and so I didn't want to be a nun anymore because you can't do both of those. So I stopped wanting to be a nun, and I wanted to date this boy, and then he got killed by a drunk driver. And so I decided that alcohol was dangerous and risky and just something I was not going to be a part of. So I became that girl that, like, yelled at you for smoking and cursing and drinking and was very, like, self-righteous and holier than thou, and parts of that still pop up today. But it was really bad then. So that's what I would do until I started to feel different and apart from, again. Part of that is because I was isolating myself away from others. And part of it was I just didn't fit. Something was just off. And the solution for me came in a bottle. I got invited to go out to a concert with some older people. I knew that they were going to be drinking. I knew that they all had fake IDs. I did not want to tell them that I didn't. I didn't want to tell them that I didn't drink. I didn't want to tell them what to do. I just wanted to be cool, you know? I wanted to be like them. And so I went to my father's liquor cabinet that he had locked up like Fort Knox, he thought. It was like all locked up, and it's this big wooden thing, and he still has it. And there's a drawer on the top of it, and if you pull the drawer out, you can just, like, reach in and pull bottles out. Doesn't matter if it's locked up. So I learned that very early on and then made fun of my brother and sister for never having figured it out because I was, like, the budding alcoholic, look at me go. And so I took his vodka, and I poured it in a water bottle, and I took it with me to the show, and I proceeded to get wasted. Now, I can tell you every bit of that night up until, like, a certain time period. But I can tell you what I wore. I can tell you who I was with. I can tell you the kind of perfume I was wearing. I can tell you the kind of vodka I took. I can tell you every bit of that because that night I found the solution for everything, for absolutely everything. I felt a part of it. I felt just like, okay, this is all right. You know, I didn't care about if I was prettier or more fun or any of that kind of stuff. I hear a lot of people talk about that. That's just not my experience. It was, I didn't care. I didn't care if she was prettier than me. I didn't care if you were more fun than me or whatever. I just didn't care. And that was such a glorious feeling I'd never had before. And so I was going to chase that as hard as I could from that point forward. And I did. I didn't become a daily drinker. I was 14. Some people do. I just didn't. I became the every opportunity drinker for a while, and I managed to graduate from high school, and I got into a college, and of course I went to a college nearby because my dirtbag boyfriend at the time didn't want me to leave. So I stayed, and I joined the college, and by this point now, I'm on something every day. Whether it was drinking or whatever, I was on something every day because the idea of being sober was horrifying. The idea of actually having to deal with you was really, really terrifying. And I also figured if you never saw me sober, you wouldn't know what the difference was. But if you ever saw me sober, then you would be able to call me on it when I was wasted. But if you only ever saw me wasted, you wouldn't know. So that's what I did. I got, like I said, I got into college, and it was time to, like, rush a sorority. And so I went to their little rush week and met the different kinds of girls. And there's, like, the slut girls, and there's, like, the pretty girls, and there's the drinkers, and there's all these different little groups. And so I went with the dry girls because they looked pretty and they looked like well put together and they wore pearls. And I really wanted to be one of them. I wanted to be like that good girl. I wanted to be that girl that like my family was proud of and that girl that you bring home to mom and that kind of thing. I really did. The idea of actually living that way was horrifying, but I wanted you to think that that's who I was. So I joined the dry sorority, who of course kicked me out because dry sororities don't want drunks around. They don't like it so much, and they really don't like it when you get all of their pledges wasted. They don't like that at all. So they kicked me out of that, and at that point, I really felt like I had no reason to actually continue school, because the only reason I was in school was so I could be in the sorority, so I just started making fake transcripts, and that allowed me to do whatever I wanted to do all day long. Because growing up, I had been like a ballerina and a gymnast and a cheerleader. I'm sure you're shocked that I was a cheerleader, but I had been all of these things. And little by little, each one of them got knocked out because little by little, they were all starting to interfere with what I wanted to do. And I don't know that I could have articulated that at the time. At the time, it was just, this is going to be more fun. You know, I just want to be young. I just want to do this. I just want to do that. But looking back, it was absolutely, I wanted to get drunk instead of do anything else. And if you were expecting me to wake up early to do something, not going to happen. If you were expecting me to leave a party to do something, not going to happen. If you were expecting me to stay sober to do something, not going to happen. Even if I wanted to stay sober to do something. Somewhere along the line, that shifted where it wasn't my choice anymore. It wasn't my call anymore. If it was time to get wasted, I was going to get wasted. Even like, you know, like the big book talks about like pounding my fist on the table. Like, why am I doing this again? And there were those times of, what am I doing here? This isn't who I want to be. but I didn't have control over it anymore. So I got some job in Ybor where you, like, sit at the front of the bar and basically, like, collect money from people and don't do anything. They also happen to give you a bar tab and a bouncer to do this, which is great for a drunk like me because I can go, I can get wasted on your dime, I can pass out in the bathroom, the bouncer can pick me up and bring me back and put me back in my chair. And I can collect money for this. And this is a sweet deal for a drunk like me. So I just did that. That allowed me to become completely and utterly nocturnal. I would leave my house to do this job or to go to Walmart in the middle of the night to buy hair dye. That was about it. I don't know why, always the hair dye. But that's just kind of where my head goes. We'll fix it with hair, you know? A lot of people move around the country or do different things or get like a new boyfriend or whatever. I dye my hair. And everything's going to get better. And so that's what I would do. I really became very afraid. And those of you in this room who know me know that I'm not a particularly quiet person or a shy person. However, at that time, I whispered everything I said. I later learned that. I didn't know it at the time. But apparently, I whispered everything because I was deathly afraid that somebody was going to hear me. I also had foiled out all of my windows because I was deathly afraid that somebody was going to see me. If you actually knew who I was, there's no way you could like me. I didn't like me. I thought I was disgusting. Why would anybody else want to be around somebody like me? I'm gross. So I just hold myself off from everybody else. Anybody who tried to tell me that what I was doing was inappropriate, anybody who tried to tell me that what I was doing was dangerous or hurtful, or any of those things that, like, the caring people tell us, done. I'm out. We are no longer friends. And I'm a runner, not like a workout runner, I don't do that, but I'm a runner, like I take off. I like to take off a lot. I've been doing it since I was a kid. You know, the older I got, the farther I would run. And so, you know, I'd run away a couple of times and they'd thrown me in therapy and, you know, they'd talk to the priest and they'd tried all these things to, like, oh good God, what has happened to our daughter? We're gonna need to fix her. And none of this was working because I was never honest with anyone about anything. I was holed up in my closet with, like, three deadbolted doors between me and the outside world because I was so afraid of what you would think of me if you actually knew who I was. That was just horrifying. And so I, you know, got in the car wrecks and I did that kind of stuff. I got put in handcuffs a couple times, but I never got arrested because I can cry on cue pretty well. And I drove a car that I thought looked like a soccer mom car, and my mom actually got me a little soccer ball magnet to put on my car for when I was driving home from the bar. Because she thought, you will look like a soccer mom and you will not get arrested. God bless her, you know. But it worked, you know. So I'm around college, and my parents basically, after a very long story, finally figure out that I'm not actually in school. So they pull my little butt home because they're not going to support the drunk anymore. If you want to act this way, fine. You're going to come home. You're going to be under our roof. We're going to watch you. We're going to make you go to work. If you want to be a grown-up, you're going to have to act like one. Ugh. So they made me go get a job, and they put me in their house. Well, their house was stocked with liquor all the time, and I told you already that I knew how to get into their liquor cabinet. So now I have a job with a paycheck, no bills, and free booze. This is awesome. You know, this is a good deal for me. What ended up happening is it allowed me to hit bottom much quicker than I think I would have otherwise because everything was right there. It was right there. There was no holds bar. There was nothing stopping me. And in my head, I thought, if anything happens, they'll take care of it. They're good people. They love me. God forbid something happens, they will step up and they will take care of this. So I can just do whatever I want. And so I ended up in nasty situations with dangerous people and doing things I absolutely shouldn't have done. And it allowed me to feel very much like I was holier than thou because I would be with these disgusting people like, ugh, well, I'm not like them, you know, or be around these people and if somebody would say something wrong about me and, oh, no, I'm not as bad as him, you know. That kind of stuff, which is just gross, but this is who I was, because if you had something that I wanted, I was going to hang out with you until I could get it, and then I was going to, like, leave you on the side of the road somewhere. But, so we're doing this, they make me get the job, I start doing the job, and I dated some disgusting man, well, I dated a few, but this particular disgusting guy had shown back up, and I didn't want to see him, and I didn't want him to know where I was and stuff like that, and so he sent flowers to the place where I was working, and it freaked me out, and like I said, when I'm uncomfortable, I leave. So I got in my car and I left. I was working on South Dale Mabry at the time. I was living in a house in South Tampa. And the first time I stopped my car was in Tallahassee. And then I stopped my car again in Missouri. And then I proceeded to go around the country just because. I don't know that I really had a reason for that. I think looking back, I did that because I had on occasion asked for help. I had told them every once in a while. something's wrong here. You know, it was usually to try to get out of some kind of trouble, like when they figured out that I was not actually in school and they were like trying to fight about that. And I'm like, oh, you're right, I need help. I want to kill myself. And so I generally would say I wanted to kill myself. I never told him I had like a problem drinking. And so they would try to get me some help. And the next day I would say how I had overreacted and it was fine. And let me just show you that I'll do the right thing now. And I think that the crazy trip that I took ended up being something big enough that I couldn't explain it away. And I think that was, in a weird way, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because I could not come home from that and say, it's fine, I got it under control. I ended up being gone for about 3 weeks in like rural America, again, dyed the hair, and just started going to like these really like random podunk places. I didn't go anywhere cool. They thought I was at Bonnaroo for a while because it happened to be around that same time, and I wish I'd thought of it, but I didn't. Instead, I was in like Idaho in like a cornfield laying down taking pictures, because I took pictures of the whole thing. I don't know why. Anyways, so I'm bouncing around rural America taking my pictures and going to random bars, and now I've come up with the idea that if I find the right place, I can start over. If I find the right place, it'll be okay. And meanwhile, I'm going to these gross bars and being completely inappropriate and making people totally angry and then having to leave and do it all over again. I found out that while I was doing that, while I was just getting wasted for a couple weeks, my family had no idea where I was. My family had no idea that I was going anywhere. So they started calling everybody that I knew, because that's what you do when you have lost someone. You call people and try to find them. I thought this was very offensive. That's why I say it that way. But they were just trying to find their daughter. So they called everybody, and they found out everything. I mean, my parents heard my first fifth step before I wrote a fourth step. Like, they heard everything that I had ever done, and they became very afraid. And there were a couple of people that they called that, like, tried to cover for me or whatever. I don't speak to those people today. I speak to the people who told my parents the truth and said, we're afraid for her, and let's help, and tried to, like, help find me. And they put up flyers all over the place, and the FBI was there, and there's some TV show there that, like, finds missing kids, who got really mad when I came back, and, like, no one had kidnapped me. I had just left. So while I was gone, like I said, I was just kind of driving around, and I ended up going to this city called Champaign. It's in Illinois, just because I thought it was clever. You know, Champaign, I'm going to go there. And so I went to Champaign, and I got out of my car to have somebody put air in my tire, because, of course, I go on my cross-country trip with no air in my tires. And I asked this guy to do that, and I get back to my car, and there's a man in my car. And I know that the logical reaction to that would be to, like, scream, ask for help, anything. You know, by this point, I had dismantled my phone, because Law and Order taught me to do that if you don't want people to find you. And so I saw him in my car. I knew this was stupid. I knew this was a bad idea. And I decided I need a friend. I don't have a friend in Champaign. So I made friends with this man and asked him if he, you know, knew how to party and knew where to go. And he said yes. And he promptly threw me in the back of my own car and drove me to Chicago, which was helpful because I couldn't figure out their interstate system at all. I was like going in circles for like 3 days. And so he knew the way out of Champaign, so it was helpful. And so he takes me to Chicago, and we go to this little neighborhood, and we walk into this house, and walking into the house, there's a couple of other men that are there with him, and I walked in anyways. You know, I assessed the situation. I realized it was a bad idea. I realized it was a dangerous way to go. I also realized that they had some things that I wanted, so I went in the house to go get them. And I really thought I was invincible, you know? Like, I'll be able to work it out. You know, I'm tough. Please. I was 20 pounds lighter than I am right now. There's nothing tough about me, but I thought that I was. So I go into this house, and I get wasted with these people, and all of a sudden the booze runs out, the drugs run out, so I'm done. You know, I have no other reason to be here. I'm ready to go. Thank you for getting me out of Champaign, but I'm done here. And they didn't agree. They did not think that it was time for me to leave yet. So I ended up locked in the basement of that house for a couple of days, and what you can imagine happens when you get locked in a basement with gross people. But I chose to walk into that house. That was my call. I did that. I did that because as an alcoholic, I don't have any value on myself. I don't have any dignity. I don't have any integrity. All I have is that self-seeking motive of going to get what I want. And they had something that I want, so I went and got it without any regard for myself, without any regard for my family, without any regard for anything. But while I was there, something clicked. Something in my head said, this is not acceptable. This is not okay. How did you end up here? This isn't your life. And something in me said, you've got to live. You've got to get the hell out of here, and you got to live. And so again, very long story made, really short. I was able to get out of that house through the grace of a child who I believe was an angel sent from God that opened a door and allowed me to leave that house. And I wish that I could say that I got sober then and was like, yay, it's all great. And I didn't. I immediately went to the bar because that was a great, great excuse to get drunk. You're like, I've been locked in a basement for 3 days. I'm going to get drunk and you're going to pay for it. And it worked. And then I, you know, started to keep on my journey, my trip. And I got to Canada and freaked out because I didn't want them to find me there, you know, like, if you try to cross the border, they kind of pay attention to who you are. And so I started to drive around, and I found this little city called Madison, Wisconsin, which is just, like, bright and shiny. And there were these, like, little hippies outside, and they were frisbeeing by, like, the sailboats. And I just thought it was just beautiful. And I started to watch these people. I mean, like, stalker status, watch these people. And I was like, this is the life I was supposed to have. This is beautiful. You know, I had every opportunity to do this. And instead, I am absolutely disgusting because I haven't really showered this entire time. I had cried so much and was so dirty while crying that my eyes were kind of crusted shut. And I was growing a tumor, so I wasn't really able to stand up straight. So I was kind of like at an angle. And I tried to dye my hair so it was all horizontally striped. So I'm sure these people were like, who is this girl? But I'm looking at them, and I'm looking at me, and it's just not okay. And so now I need a tattoo to commemorate this. So I go and I find a tattoo shop, and I get this ridiculously large cross on the back of my neck, and I get forgive written across my arm because I'm poetic, and I had like a line from where they had tied me up, and so I thought if I just write forgive over it, I will. I don't know. And something great happened. I ran out of money, you know? I ran out of money, so now I got to call home. And I called home, and I told them that I needed some money. Well, I told them that I was okay first, and then I asked for some money, and of course they told me no, they're not going to send me any money, but they'll send somebody to come and get me, because that's what they always did. They gave me the option of they'll come and get me or they'll send the police to come and get me, and I didn't want the police to come. So they sent a friend this time instead, and that friend came and got me and brought me home. And when I got home, it was just a mix of emotions of a bunch of different people, and it was just a hot mess. You know, I thought that they were going to be so excited that I was back. And yay, she's here. And they weren't. They were irate. They were scared. They thought their daughter had died. My mother had been planning a funeral for a week and a half by this point. And I just come back, and I have no explanation for what just happened. I can't tell them any reason why I did what I just did, because I don't know. I honestly don't know, and thank God I actually told them I don't know. I don't know what just happened, but I don't know how to live. And it was the most honest I'd ever been, because that was the truth. I don't know how to live. I didn't have any spiritual principles. I didn't have an option. My solution was getting drunk, and my solution was killing everybody around me. And so they told me that I was going to have to go to rehab. And I was horrified. Rehab was not going to be the solution for this. Take me to an insane asylum, lock me up, do not let me out. This is the only way any of this is going to get better. So they took me to a rehab and said that it was an insane asylum. And so we went there, and they convinced me to check in by doing that. And the crazy thing is that to me was a good option. You know, looking back, that seems absolute crazy town, but I was absolute crazy town. I wanted to be locked up because there was a moment of clarity that said, you don't know what you're doing, and this is not okay. And so I went there, and I became the obnoxious girl in rehab who didn't think she had a problem, so started telling everybody else what they needed to do. And, like, so many people here have been to rehab. We've all had that person, you know, where the drunk next to you is telling you how to make it all better. And I was that person. And after about 2 weeks, they just couldn't stand it anymore, and they surrounded me and told me that was not acceptable. I was one of them, too. And they started taking us to meetings, and they took us to AA meetings and NA meetings. And in AA, I was told to sit down and shut up and not speak, and I thought that was rude. And in NA, I was asked if I had a problem, I was welcome to share. And I thought that was lovely. So I started to go to NA. And I proceeded to take NA hostage for a while. For 6 straight months, I shared in every meeting I went to. Every day, sometimes 2 or 3 times a day. And I certainly don't recommend this to anybody else, but this is what happened for me. And the problem was, is I started to get involved. I got a sponsor. Rehab had told me that I was a drug addict, so that's what I did. And I did what my sponsor told me to do. I got this big black lady named Lola, and she made me go to her home group. It was called Freedom Recovery in DeHood, and it was a bunch of big black guys and me, and it was great because I could be the center of attention all the time. And the problem was, is I started talking about how much I wanted to drink, because now I've been sober for a year, and I'm obsessed with drinking. I've been sober for a year. I've worked the steps. I've gotten involved. I've been of service. I've got my sponsor. I'm trying to help other people, and I'm nuts because I want to drink all day, every day, because I'm surrounding myself with people who have a problem that's different than the problem that I have. You know, there are people in this world who are both. I am not. I am an alcoholic who tried to hide out in NA because it seemed more appropriate. And so I keep sharing about how I want to drink and how I want to drink and how I want to drink. And they are kindly telling me, honey, you need to go to AA. We don't relate to the problem that you're having. And so they make me go to AA, or they tell me I have to go to AA, and I'm furious. I don't want to go there. So instead, I decide I'm going to do it on my own. I'm a year sober, or like a year and a half, something like that. And I decide that I'm going to do it by myself. And in a 3-week span, I lost my job. I dropped out of school again, sober. I went nuts. My parents started drug testing me again because they couldn't fathom the fact that I could possibly still be sober and be acting the way that I'm acting. And I got invited to come to this group, into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came because a cute boy asked me to come. I came because I wanted a date. That was it. Those were truly my motives. I came completely inappropriately dressed in like a backless shirt that was silk and like, but I came for a date. I did not come for a solution. I did not come for a fellowship. I did not come to get sober. I thought I knew how to do that. But what happened was I came in to see the cute boy, and there was a lady at the podium, and she was telling her story, and she was talking about wanting to drink the way that I wanted to drink. And she was talking about it not from when she was drunk. She was talking about it from when she was sober, that she had spent years sober, obsessed with drinking. And I got that. That made sense to me. I thought that once you took the drink away, that was supposed to make everything better. And what happened for me is you took the drink away and it got worse. It sucked. I was miserable. And she talked about that, and I could relate to that. And so I kept showing up trying to find these women who were talking about the things that I got, the things that I understood. And I got a sponsor, and she helped me by taking me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and telling me that whatever I had done leading up to that point was irrelevant because I was still crazy and we needed to do some work here. And she grabbed the big book, and we did the steps as they are outlined in the book. And we went through that, and I started to get involved in a completely different way. I started to get involved because I wanted to be involved, because I felt as though I owed something to Alcoholics Anonymous because I wasn't crazy anymore. You know, there was still crazy stuff happening for sure, but it was not that same level of self-centered fear that I had had before. Something had changed. I wanted to be a part of this thing. I stopped being around a fellowship, and I became a part of this fellowship. I earned my seat here by doing the work here. And everything started to change, you know, absolutely everything. Now, not that everything got fantastic. Like, my mom got sick, I got dumped, all sorts of stuff happened, you know what I mean? Life still shows up. But there were these people in these rooms who were talking about life showing up and staying sober through it. So when life showed up for me and bad things happened for me, I knew how to stay sober, through it. Because you'd told me and you'd shown me, which was far more important in my opinion. Anything that you said kind of went one ear out the other, because I could talk a good game too. But if I watched you outside of the meeting and you were putting your hand out to somebody else and you were legitimately helping them after you talked about how important it was to help other people, then I paid attention to what you had to say, that kind of thing. There were people who were not just talking, they were doing, they were of action. And I got blessed with coming to this group that at the time had these fantastic people who were super involved, and this group still has that. But at that time, the group was a bit smaller, and more people were involved in that way, and it became a non-option to not get involved, because then I'd just be sitting at home by myself. And I ended up moving over to Tampa. I was living in Clearwater at the time for 2 years coming to this group, and eventually I moved over here because I'd found my home in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's why it's my home group. I had found people in AA that made me know it was okay, it was gonna be okay, that no matter whatever showed up in life, it was gonna be okay. And eventually, all these little things that they had taught me along the way, like I had to go to meetings every day, I had to show up on time, I couldn't smoke cigarettes in the middle of the meeting, I had to put my phone away because that's not where the message is. All these little things that I thought were just irritating and like rules that they were telling me, turns out helped me when I got into like a job that I had to go every day. I had to be there on time. I didn't get to take 16 cigarette breaks throughout it. I got to learn by talking to my sponsor that hanging up on people is not appropriate. If I have asked somebody for help, I should listen to it and then take it. You know, these little things that I thought were really annoying and just somebody being like nitpicky and rude, it turns out these lessons were going to carry over into my life and they were going to change my life. It turns out that I was going to be able to become a sister and a friend and a daughter and all of these things that I thought I had completely and utterly thrown away. You know, I got to go through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as outlined in the book. And that's where I got the spiritual awakening. That was the rearrangement of everything in me that changed everything. When my mom got sick, I got to show up for her. I got to be there for her. I got to take care of her like she took care of me. And that's a gift. I've been able to go and make amends to people that scare the hell out of me. You know, I got to make one just a couple of weeks ago that I'd been holding on to for 10 years because I was sitting talking to one of the girls that I sponsor, and she very simply put it, what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? Why not go do it? And I got to do that, and I got to stand a little taller, and I don't have to look over my shoulder for that girl anymore, and I don't have to be afraid if she's over there because we're good now. I've cleaned up my side of the street, and it's okay now. You know, I get to take inventories not as often as I would like to, but I do the best I can. It's generally if I'm telling somebody else that they need to do an inventory that I will then go home and do an inventory. But I get to do those, and I get to talk to my sponsor about it, and I get a clear voice telling me how we can go forward. She doesn't necessarily tell me what to do. She helps me to see what I think is right, and she helps to point out when I'm wrong. But she allows me to make my own mistakes in AA because I'm a human being and I'm going to. And she lets that be okay. She doesn't hate me for doing something wrong. She doesn't yell at me for doing something wrong. She just tells me how we're going to get better and do it right the next time. And that's a huge gift. I got to come in here and get a job that I adore. Absolutely adore. It's fun, and I'm good at it. I really got this job pretty sure that I was completely unqualified, but it turns out if you show up every day and you do what they tell you to do and you ask for help when you don't know what to do, they don't fire you. They help you. Who knew? I got to fall in love in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to fall in love with a man that Alcoholics Anonymous put together, and he got to fall in love with a woman that Alcoholics Anonymous put together. I got to fall in love with a man who does not try to be my sponsor. Thank God. I got to fall in love here, and I got to basically fill a wedding with half the people in this room, and it was absolutely amazing, and we get to continue to show up here, because God, like I said, does for me what I can't do for myself. So the minute I got home from my honeymoon, I got bombarded with a bunch of crazy people, because that's how I stay sober, with crazy people picking up the phone and calling me, with crazy people asking for help. That's what I need. God said, no, you're not going to go home and just be a wife and whatever, because I've watched that happen in AA, and it's scary. You know, things start to go well in our lives and we bail. I think more often than not when, you know, crap hits the fan, we know where to go. We know to show up here. We know this is our solution. But when things go well, it's easy to walk away and say, I got this. And God has done me quite a few favors along the way of saying, no, ma'am, you do not. You still need to be there. And people like Joe, you know, who came along right around that time, made it absolutely unacceptable for me to not show up. Made it unacceptable for me to not be here. And coming here has absolutely changed everything because of the big book. The steps are in there. The solution is in there. And anything that it doesn't tell me in black and white, I have a sponsor to help with. I have to talk to God. I have a relationship with God today that I have never known before. I was raised in a religion, and I absolutely adore it. By the way, just side note, this recovering Catholic nonsense, it's offensive. Just stop it. I am an actual Catholic, and that is okay. I get to be one here because we all get to find our own conception of God here. And it's okay that mine lines up with millions of other people. And it's okay that yours may not. We all get to find our own conception of God here. And that is such a cool thing. There's so few places that all these people who believe in all of these different things can come together and agree that at least we have one common solution. We have one common problem and we have one common solution. And I believe as long as we stick together with that, we're gonna be okay. Life will still happen, things still happen, but we get to stay sober throughout. We get to become good, productive members of society. And thank God AA doesn't kick you out when you make a mistake. You get to come back and try again. You just keep, you know, just keep coming, and it makes it better. And if you're new here tonight, welcome. Welcome. Please stay. You may be miserable right now, and that's okay. If you walked in the door and you're happy, God bless you. I don't understand that. But if you walked in the door tonight and you are absolutely miserable, that gets better. Just do the work here, and that really does get better. Become an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything changes. We no longer have to drink anymore. Having a seat in a meeting is a great thing, and it's a great start, but there's a hell of a lot more to it than just having a seat in a meeting. We have a program here that actually works, and thank you very much for allowing me to work it.